Colin Powell dies at the age of 84. Barry Weiss goes on Brian Stelter, where he cuts her off in an interview, and a liberal thinks that all kids should go on puberty blockers. I'm William Hall, and this is The William Hall Show. All right, welcome back to the show. So obviously I've been gone for the last week. A lot of that is actually because I haven't been really able to talk that much. And as you can probably tell by my voice right now, I'm still kind of recovering. My voice is kind of at 50% of what it was before. So just kind of try to bear with me as I try to get through this. I really wanted to do the same two shows I normally do last week, but I really was not able to even talk properly at all. Just, of course, sinuses this time of the year is always terrible. So just bear with me, like I said, as I try to go through this. And hopefully by Thursday, I'll be even better than I am right now. But let's go ahead and start getting into things. So just today, Colin Powell actually died at the age of 84. Now, what you're going to be seeing a lot from the media are very conflicting stories. So the actual report that we have, and for those of you that don't know, Colin Powell, first black Secretary of State, he was kind of under a lot of Republicans for a while. And then actually under Obama, once Obama got elected, he actually started endorsing him actually twice. So not really exactly who you'd call a Republican these days, at least. But really what you have is a situation where he actually died, and they stated due to complications from COVID-19. And that's really the crucial step here, because it's this guy, by the way, fully vaccinated. He had both shots, the entire vaccination that you can have, and died at the age of 84 regardless. Now, of course, he was old regardless of the situation, but the idea was that this was supposed to help the elderly, the older people the most. Yet, regardless, it was still something where he passed away from it. Now, by the way, Alan West, a guy that's actually running for governor of Texas right now, not exactly a young person, got COVID-19, didn't take the vaccine at all, was using the standard treatments that we've seen with the monoclonal antibodies and a few other things like that, and managed to make it out of it without an issue. So this is an interesting situation, because what you're going to see is the mainstream media is going to be pushing this as some way to basically blame the unvaccinated. When they're in doubt, that's what they do. They want to blame the unvaccinated for what's taking place. They want to say that, well, he was around these unvaccinated people, so therefore, it's their fault that he died of COVID, and completely ignore the idea that he was fully vaccinated. You're also going to see them leave that detail out. They're specifically not going to tell you that he had both vaccinations for this. This is what the mainstream media does. They hide the information. They hope that people don't look it up. They hope that people don't know anything about it. And that's what basically typically happens. Now, on Twitter, there was a comment that I saw from this liberal person basically saying, well, guys, you just need to understand that the vaccine is fantastic, okay? It's this perfect thing, but, you know, or at least we try to spin it as perfect, but it's not, you know, 100% perfect, right? I mean, it's great, but it's not 100% perfect. So, I mean, what's so hard about this for you guys, you conservatives, to really understand about all of that? Well, here's the thing. You can have your opinion of it that you believe it's fantastic and whatever else, but by merely admitting the fact that it's not perfect tells me that we shouldn't be mandating it. You shouldn't be requiring things that are not flawless, in my opinion. And even if it was, it shouldn't matter. I mean, it's still against our constitutional rights as American citizens, but still, you have liberals literally out there trying to move the goalposts again. Okay, well, we admit it. It's not perfect. It's great, but it's not perfect. Okay, either way, you can't mandate it for people. And you're only making it more obvious that we shouldn't be mandating it as time goes on. So moving on a little bit after that, and of course we'll be, you know, regardless, it's a bad situation for him and his family and stuff like that. But it's really going to be a telltale kind of story to see how the mainstream media tries to run this, to see how they actually go about trying to cover this story. I'm very curious to see what happens with that. But I think we kind of have an idea of that already, as I've already alluded to. In another bit of a story, 20 million Americans have left their jobs between April and August. Now, this is a big deal, because what you're starting to see right now is the economy is not doing very well. We're seeing a lot of supply chain issues, and we're kind of trying to figure out, okay, why is it that we have so many jobs available, but no one to really fill it. Nobody's actually working as far as it's concerned when we're looking at these numbers. Now, these numbers here, the number that I just gave you, the 20 million, is more than 60% higher than the resignations handed in during the same period of time last year, and 12% above the spring and summer of 2019 when the job market was at its hottest, the best it's ever been. Now, we have to look at some of the policies that have been passed. We have to look at that $1.9 trillion American Rescue Plan, which rescued no one, by the way. I don't even know why they called it that. It's one of those things where it sounds great on paper, but in reality, it really doesn't do much of anything, does it? So this whole plan there was to extend or a portion of that big spending bill that Biden was implementing was supposed to extend the unemployment check. So that bonus, that $300 weekly bonus they were going to be giving to people, this was supposed to extend that, okay? And the thing is that people are still not working, okay? As we mentioned before, when you incentivize people to basically not work, they're not going to work. But the other side of that coin is that they're also basically telling people that they should be scared to work, that there's no reason why they should be even trying to go to their job at all, because they should be worried about this virus, they should be worried about this pandemic, that they must wear this mask everywhere they go no matter what's happening. That's what's happening right now. So you have kind of this twofold design of things where people are scared to work and people are also not incentivized to work. They're being incentivized to actually legitimately not have a job. So why would they in turn work a job? For many people, they're perfectly fine with this stuff, with just the unemployment. So they don't care one way or another. The thing is that Americans are also leaving their jobs because of the vaccine mandates. We've seen this in the field of nursing. We've seen this with the airlines specifically. If you remember, and I wasn't able to cover this because I was unable to really speak at all, but Southwest Airlines was one of the big ones that came out about with this. They canceled, I believe it was 1,800 flights over the course of one weekend, all because of the fact that they had no ability to fill in pilots, to fill in the flight attendant staff. And of course, they wanted to initially blame that and say, well, it was these weather issues. I mean, that clearly must have been what it was. That wasn't true. That's just not true. That's PR speak. That's a complete lie. It was because of the fact that they were trying to implement these vaccine mandates, and as a result of which, they wound up losing a lot of employees as a result. That's what happens, and that's what should happen, because that's how the market corrects itself. That's how we win here, is that when pilots, when nurses, when whoever it is, doctors, firefighters, police officers, whenever these people basically push back hard enough on this stuff, they can't implement it. These things are implemented in a way that is basically meant to assume that you're going to go along with it. So, for example, I'm actually on the side. I do this every once in a while. I play in various orchestras in the Central Florida area. And one of the orchestras that I'm playing with was initially they sent out a contract about 5 months ago, earlier this year. And everything seemed pretty much like you would expect it to be. Just a standard orchestra contract telling me what showing me what dates I needed to do. And I signed in, told them, you know, signed off on the dates of the concerts that I could perform in. And everything was fine. We were good to go. Already signed the contract. I was ready to start later this year with the concerts. But then they actually just a month ago sent out a new contract, okay? And I'm thinking to myself, why would these guys need to send out a new contract? What would be the reason as to why they would want to send out a new contract? So I'm thinking to myself, okay, well, let me read through it this time, because normally I don't, but let me read through it. So in going through the contract, I saw a whole new section added under the COVID policy, where they were requiring everybody in the orchestra be vaccinated, double vaxxed, requiring them to obviously wear the masks at all of the facilities and everything else. I mean, you would not believe that it was everything you could have possibly imagined. It was there of all of the types of vaccinations they wanted you to have. And if you didn't have the vaccination, you had the option to have those exemptions. But then if you had those exemptions, you had to literally do a test 2 days prior, within 48 hours before you started any of the rehearsals, every time you were going to perform, which is crazy, a lot of work, and obviously not worth it. So I denied the contract. I told him, I'm not doing this. I'm not going to sign this contract with this orchestra And I told him the reasons why. I'm not going to get vaccinated, and it isn't going to happen in the future either, and I'm not going to do the testing either. Doesn't matter what you do. So after that, that was it. There was no way that I was going to basically be performing with him, and they may change their minds. It really doesn't matter to me. The point is that there needs to be real consequences, because when they send these out, when they try to get people to sign up for this, they're doing this with the assumption that you're just going to comply, that you're going to do exactly what they say, no matter what it is. When people start saying, no, I'm not standing for this, then they're standing there trying to figure out what's going on. Then they are forced to actually get rid of these mandates. That's what has to happen. That's what these pilots, these flight attendants, that's what these people were doing, and it obviously has started to work. So the CEO, by the way, of Southwest was very quick to say, look, okay, even though we kind of lied about that whole thing about it being about the weather, we're not wanting to implement these mandates, right? Like, they actually came out and said they don't want to do that. So the CEO of Southwest, I think it was Gary Kelly, said in a statement, I've never been in favor of corporations imposing that kind of mandate. And then he said, I'm not in favor of that, never have been. But the executive order from President Biden mandates that all federal employees and then all federal contractors, which covers all major airlines, have to have the vaccine mandate in place by December 8th. So we're working through that. So basically what he's just saying is this is Biden's fault. This is not ours. We wouldn't want to do this. We wouldn't normally do this under our own conditions, but this is Biden's fault. And that's the reason why this is taking place. So we're seeing the CEO step out and say this. We're seeing the companies step out and say this. The more blame that gets put on Biden, the more people are starting to wake up. We're seeing it all over the place when you see the Let's Go Brandon, right, getting chanted everywhere. You're seeing people begin to wake up to what's actually happening out there in this world. And it's going to pay off. I'm guaranteeing you, like, in 2022 is going to be a very big deal, because we're going to start to see people finally begin to say, okay, you know what? We made a mistake in 2020. We really did. By if they wound up being one of those people that voted for Biden, I think they already have realized that they made a massive mistake. So in line or in lieu of the vaccine mandates and everything, Leon County, which is a county in Florida, got fined $3.5 million because they were trying to implement the vaccine mandate. So this is one of those situations where Ron DeSantis told every county in Florida, do not implement these mandates. If you implement these mandates, you're going to get fined, because there has to be some type of consequence to their actions, because you know certain counties are going to do it anyways. That's how this works. So he actually sent a letter to Leon County Administrator Vincent Long on Wednesday, notifying him that the county has been found to have violated state law 714 times and will be fined $3.57 million and that they are going to basically go ahead and fine them for this. Now, the county said in a statement that they are going to enforce its rights against the state. And my first thought process is, your rights? The county's rights? How about the people's rights to not be forced to take this vaccine? They never think of that. They're only thinking about their own power, the stuff that they can control. They never care about the actual people that they're trying to implement this on in the first place. That's the way this always has worked for these people. So Ron DeSantis, of course, responded to him in kind because on September 13th, they were firing 14 employees who refused to just show proof of the vaccination. So even if they had it and say didn't have proof of it, boom, they would get slammed. They would get immediately terminated. So Ron DeSantis replied to this whole ordeal in a statement saying, we're going to protect Florida jobs. We're not going to let people be fired because of a vaccine mandate. You don't just cast aside people who've been serving faithfully over this issue. That's basically a personal choice on their individual health. We cannot let folks be cast aside. We cannot allow their jobs to be destroyed and their families and livelihoods potentially be destroyed as well. And of course, he's absolutely correct here, because what you're seeing is kind of like I was talking about in the last episode, where you had nurses that all of before they were heroes and then all of a sudden they're zeros. The same thing goes with this. It's all it took was this one issue and your 20 years of employment, however long you've been employed, goes out the window. They don't care about you anymore. You were a valued employee, then all of a sudden they could care less, or they couldn't care less about you at all. It didn't matter, because you didn't get the vaccine that they wanted you to get, and the time they framed that they wanted you to have it with a certain amount of proof that you wanted to have it. It's ridiculous that they're still trying to do this in these counties, but that's why Ron DeSantis is there, to make sure and hold these counties accountable for this, because otherwise they're going to do it. They're absolutely going to do it. And that's a massive problem if they can get away with it. So it's good to see that we're actually seeing some fines get passed to these people, because they're going to have to learn at some point that you cannot infringe on the rights of the American people. Doesn't matter about your rights, only the rights of the people. That's what this all comes down to, is the actual individual. Gavin Newsom is kind of going on this new tirade to try and get rid of literally every kind of the, basically he's trying to go along with all of this new climate change stuff. So now there's a new report saying that he's going to be banning all of the gas powered lawnmowers, leaf blowers, and chainsaws as soon as 2024. This is a part of, like I said, this climate change eco-friendly stuff that they've been trying to do forever. And it's just gotten ridiculous at this point, and you'll see why. But they're going to be requiring that all newly sold small motor equipment, primarily used for landscaping, to be zero emission. Basically, you're going to need to have to plug it in, or have the ability to plug that in, or it's going to need to be battery powered. Either way, it's going to require one or the other. Now, if you've got a big yard, good luck. Okay, because I couldn't imagine how in the world you're going to get a battery lawnmower to go that entire distance. I mean, they never think about stuff like this. They assume that everybody's just kind of sitting in the same place doing the same thing, but that's not how all of this works. I mean, there's always somewhat of a difference that's going on throughout all of that. Now, the new law, they're saying to any engine that produces less than 25 gross horsepower, like I said, this is including lawnmowers, weed trimmers, chainsaws, golf carts, specialty vehicles, generators, and pumps. But it does not apply to any of the normal vehicles that you would see, like motorcycles and cars and boats, snowmobiles, airplanes, things like that. But rest assured, it will. I mean, literally, there's another law that executive order he signed into place that's going to require all new cars and passenger trucks sold in California to be zero emission by 2035. So even though they're doing this with these small motor things now with your lawnmower, they're starting there. By the way, that's your generator too. So good luck if you lose power, you can't run a generator anymore. How does that work, guys? I mean, nobody wants to talk about that. I mean, what about the pressure washers that typically run with a motor? How is this going to work? I mean, they're going to be ruining industries here simply out of what reason? What reason are they trying to do this? They're pretending as if this is actually going to make some difference, and I'll explain why it won't. But it isn't, plain and simple. And they're going to be doing this to the cars very soon. And what's funny is that, you know, of course, they wanted to lift Tesla up on a pedestal as being the kind of iconic electric car. But even Elon Musk doesn't want to keep his factory in California because of high taxes and everything else that, you know, is terrible about California. He's moving his plant and main corporate office to Texas. That's not a very good look for Gavin Newsom, is it? And you have them trying to implement this stuff, but it's not going to make a difference. Remember, California can barely keep its lights on. If you remember reports earlier this year, last year, I mean, they were having power outages like crazy. Why? Because their eco power plants weren't working very well. They're not very consistent at all. And yet they want to, for some reason, assume that this is somehow going to help. It doesn't make sense. It really doesn't. Now, the thing that we also have to look at is, because California is trying to be a part of this whole woke climate change accord thing where they care so much about it. Think of the Greta Thunbergs and everything, where they think they're making this big difference. But even if all the pollution in California was zero, it wouldn't make a dent anywhere. It just won't. Even if the entire United States of America were to entirely reduce its emissions to zero, which is impossible, by the way, okay? That is an impossibility. But if it did, it would make such a small difference that nobody would even be able to tell whatsoever anyways. And we'd be living in an absolute terrible, terrible country to live in at that point. But the reason why it won't make a difference whatsoever, whether it's California or the entire United States, is because of China. India too, but China's probably one of the most outright ones out there, whereas they don't care about the climate at all. They care about running their country. Fancy that. But so, for example, there was a closure of a plant in the U.S., the Navajo plant, I guess one of their coal plants or something like that. Well, China opened up a new one literally 19 days after that one closed. They're not even trying to cover this up. They really don't care. China does not care at all. So China plans to build more coal power plants and has hinted that it will rethink its timetable to slash emissions in a significant blow to the UK's ambitions for securing a global global agreement on phasing out coal at the climate summit. Now, like I said, the UK, all these countries get together to basically say they're going to try to reduce their emissions and do all these good things for the earth. China doesn't care. China is never and has never been a part of this. And you know what's even worse is that this group that meets at the climate summit never demonizes China. They never talk bad against China because they know better as well. They know what's going on. They know that China is the main culprit and everyone's scared to say anything against them. That's what's happening right now. So the Chinese premier, whoever it is there, said that they have stressed the importance of regular energy supply after swaths of the country were plunged into darkness by rolling blackouts that hit factories and homes. Chinese authorities went on to explain that energy security is the basis for a modern energy system, and that given the plentiful abundance of coal in China, it is important to optimize its use while intensifying domestic oil and gas exploration. So in other words, you other countries can pound sand. We are going to do our own thing. Doesn't matter. We don't care about what you guys are doing over there because we realize that when we don't have power in our country, people distrust the government that rules and runs their lives. That's what it's like to be in a communist country. And as a result of that, we need to keep the lights on for sure because we don't want people second guessing our authoritarian and communist government. That's basically what they're saying there. None of this will make a difference of what we do in the United States or any of these other countries when you have China out there doing whatever it wants to do. It is literally a waste of time, and that's why we're always talking against it, because it just doesn't make sense, especially when they ignore the world's biggest polluter in the name of wokeness, of PC culture. Is that really what it is? I think it kind of is. I mean, it's the same people that refuse to demonize China for the Wuhan lab coronavirus outbreak. I mean, it was right there. That's where it started, okay? Nobody is allowed to say anything about that. If you say it, they'll tell you that you're racist. If you say that China's the biggest polluter, all of these are facts, okay? They're going to call you a racist too. I'm not going to fall for that. That's not what we should be doing here. The facts are the facts, and China isn't willing to play along, so why are we? It doesn't make any sense. Now, universities have long since been a massive place for this type of woke ideology. We already know this. But they've kind of gone a step further with the COVID thing right now. And as a result, you have universities now that are basically deputizing students and allowing them to snitch and enforce laws on other students for not complying with the campus rules for COVID-19. So this is actually out of UCLA. No surprises there. And by the way, they're paying these students to do this. So these are the student COVID commissioners, apparently, and they've been given the authority to break up social gatherings, to check on students, their clearance certificates, and students who violate COVID policies can face suspension or expulsion, and the enforcers are only paid $15 an hour, but they have these vests and t-shirts emblazoned with the Health Ambassador logo. So this is a weird instance where you have this school basically telling students, hey, snitch on your other kids, on your other students, on your peers, break up parties. Not the police officers, the students doing this. Now, I'm assuming most of you listening have gone to college at some point or been to school at all, and you probably would wonder how much money would it take for you to basically lose all of your social credit? I mean, like, you would be ruining your reputation amongst everyone you knew if you're going into every social setting, breaking up parties, breaking up this, stopping people from doing what they're doing, checking on their certificates. Not really worth $15 an hour if you ask me. But similar colleges have done the exact same thing. Other colleges have done this where they call them health ambassadors, where they've opened up, this is, like I said, several universities, where the student workers wear yellow shirts bearing the phrase, if you can read this, you're too close, and an elite division has been dispatched to be cubby monitors who monitor the private study rooms. So this is stuff that's straight out of Germany, where you have literally neighbors snitching on neighbors. and they're being convinced to do this by the university in the name of wokeness, in the name of thinking that this is somehow the right thing to do. But this isn't the right thing to do. You know, I miss the days when universities were about freedom of thought, of people trying to expand their mindset in different directions. The whole idea behind a university was that every person that went there came there with certain ideas already kind of pre-installed in their brains and went there to hear different things. They didn't have to agree with them. They didn't have to go along with them, but they were able to kind of accept all of these different ideas. Now you have it become such a safe haven for this liberal wokeness that they are going right along with this. Nobody's going to very much be speaking out about this. The students probably don't even know any better. I fear for the next generation that grows up always wearing masks to school from the age of 1 year old all the way up through college. And just kind of look at them and see how much life they've missed because of this woke educational system. Really, really sad when you really think about it. So Barry Weiss, she's a journalist that used to write for the New York Times, saw the writing on the wall, saw that things and the openness of discussion were basically over, that you weren't able to write certain articles on certain things. She saw this very early on, saw the censorship, and decided to leave. And as a result, was on an interview with Brian Stelter from CNN, where he kind of cut her off a bit in this, but where they're basically having this whole discussion about the censorship of information. So it's kind of interesting. Check it out here.
You write, there are tens of millions of Americans who aren't on the hard left or the hard right who feel the world has gone mad. So in what ways has the world gone mad?
Well, you know, when you have the chief reporter on the beat of COVID for the New York Times talking about how questioning or pursuing the question of the lab leak is racist, the world has gone mad. When you're not able to say out loud and in public that there are differences between men and women, the world has gone mad. When we're not allowed to acknowledge that rioting is rioting and it is bad, and that silence is not violence, but violence is violence, the world has gone mad. When we're not able to say that Hunter Biden's laptop is a story worth pursuing, the world has gone mad. When, in the name of progress, young school children, as young as kindergarten, are being separated in public schools because of their race, and that is called progress rather than segregation, the world has gone mad. There are dozens of examples that I could share with you and with
and
your
you
viewers.
And you often say, you say
everyone
aloud.
Everyone sort of knows this. And
you say we're not allowed, we're not able. Who's the people stopping the conversation? Who are they?
People that work at networks, frankly, like the one I'm speaking on right now, who try and claim that, you know, it was racist to investigate the lab leak theory. It was,
but
I mean,
who
let's
said
just
that
take
at
an
CNN?
Example.
But I'm just saying that when you say aloud, I just think it's a provocative thing you say. You say we're not allowed to talk about these things, but they're all over the internet. I can Google them.
Brian,
I can find them everywhere. I've heard about every story you mentioned.
Of course.
So I'm just suggesting, of course, people are allowed to cover whatever they want to cover.
But you and I both know, and it would be delusional to claim otherwise, that touching your finger to an increasing number of subjects that have been deemed third rail by the mainstream institutions and increasingly by some of the tech companies will lead to reputational damage, perhaps you losing your job, your children sometimes being demonized as well. And so what happens is a kind of internal self-censorship. This is something that I saw over and over again when I was at the New York Times.
So, of course, she is absolutely correct here. The thing is that what she said last is really the key for me, is where she's talking about the idea that, you know, once people know what topics are not ones you should be or ones that you're normally allowed to talk about, then people do what? They begin to self-censor. And that's the key. That's one of the biggest things for me. I had spoken out about this against Ben Shapiro as well, and a few other people also that do this. Basically, any mainstream commentator right now, for the most part, if they're available on YouTube, if they're available on all of these platforms, they've yet to have been censored anywhere. My YouTube channel has two strikes already. So, but if they literally have not been censored anywhere, what you're going to see them do is not talk about it. They're just going to avoid it entirely. And yet they'll be the champions of free speech. They'll do all this stuff, but they're still giving their money in advertising to Facebook, to Google, to all of these sites that are the very same ones that they're censoring on as well. They just won't talk about it. It could be something like the vaccines. It could be something like the election. They will not talk about these issues pretty much at all. And if they do, they're going to simply tiptoe around them like crazy. In other words, everything that YouTube and the left has done is working on them. Make no mistake. Of course, they remove content that they don't like, but their goal is that we basically hone in ourselves, that we basically, you know what, just don't talk about it. That when we do say anything about it, that we're so busy beating around the bush that if you don't know all of the other information that you'd get from another source, you'll have no idea what they're even talking about. That's the scary part about this. So she's kind of hitting at something that's very, very important right now, are the people that are out there that are self-censoring themselves simply because they know what's going on out there with big tech, what topics they can and cannot discuss in their eyes. That's the problem that we have right now. And that's why I rail against some of these people that are out there that are commentators, that are very big names, that got there that way, that are literally not talking about the relevant issues going on right now because they are afraid of the censorship so much that YouTube doesn't have to censor them. Facebook doesn't have to remove their videos or their pages. They can leave it up because they will not say anything about it at all. They will not report on the facts. They're not going to report on what's actually taking place out there. That's simply what's going on. And the more that they learn about it, the more that's getting banned off of these certain sites, the more that you're going to see that take place. I mean, YouTube recently started censoring people because they were quoting the director of the CDC. That's it. Quoting the director of the CDC, you could get an absolute strike on YouTube right now because of that. And that's where we're at. That should be concerning to everyone that's out there listening to any of these people. Just make sure you're being aware of who is actually censoring themselves, because they've never been censored anywhere else, right? They haven't. If the people that haven't been censored on Facebook, on YouTube, on these sites, they're there for a very specific reason. It's because they don't talk out about any of these things at all. And they refuse, by the way, to even go to any of these other alternatives, which is also kind of funny as well. It's just kind of weird the way that works. But what you would normally have is an audience that, if they only listen to them, is completely unaware of what's actually going on out there. They're only aware of what they're willing to tell them. And so much of that is hidden behind the veil of what YouTube will allow, that they just won't talk about it anywhere. And that's really worrying to me. So to end everything off for this episode's TikTok liberal is somebody that thinks that all kids should go on puberty blockers.
Can't trust a child to know themselves and their body.
Therefore, I propose that all children be put on puberty blockers before they hit puberty.
If they're not trans, cool. They can get off puberty blockers and continue puberty as they were.
And if they are trans, then you just save them a lot of emotional pain from the secondary sex characteristics they have.
If you say that kids are too young to know whether or not they are trans, then that means that kids are too young to know whether or not they are cis.
It's two sides of the same coin, baby. We can't trust any kids to make any decisions.
So first of all, puberty blockers cannot be reversed. Them saying this and acting like they can just choose to do this, like it's some pause button. It's not a pause button. That's not what that is, okay? Just human biology doesn't work that way. You don't just hit the pause button without it damaging other things that are out there. For those that haven't read this book, I highly recommend it if you're very interested at all in the trans argument and kids that are taking these different puberty blockers, what they're meant for and all that. Go read the book, Irreversible Damage. It's a very, very specific. It's one of those books that gets into the details that may make you sick to your stomach, but it's real. It's the real facts about what's going on. The writer is not a conservative, but they report on the facts of the situation. And that's what you have here, is the actual drugs that are used for puberty blockers were actually used to sterilize people that were sex offenders. That's what they're using. I kid you not. And they're pretending as if it's just a pause button. It's not a pause button. It is causing irreversible damage. Hence the name of that book. Because what you're doing is that the girls want it being sterile, boys too, or they're underdeveloped in certain areas. This is not a thing that you can just do flippantly. This is something to be taken very seriously, and yet these people on TikTok are sitting here pretending as if this is something that that everybody should have. Meanwhile, I mean, what's the actual percentage of grown adults that even consider themselves as trans? I mean, I know it's significantly less than 1%, but yet you have people like this person here basically saying that, oh, well, you know, we should absolutely sacrifice the less than 1% for the 100% of people. That's ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. Now, I did see another post that was below this on here. Libs of TikTok always coming in with the goods for these types of videos. But they made a comment basically saying that, oh, well, it's really just satire. They're totally satire. I don't buy that. And the reason why is because they're only saying it's satire after they get a bunch of negative flack for it. Okay? That's what it is. That's what's going on. And then on top of that, I can't believe it because they were saying the same thing years ago about gay marriage, right? I mean, what was gay marriage satire? How about when they were telling people that biological men should be able to use the women's restroom? Was that satire too? Or am I the one that's crazy? What about when they were saying that trans people were going to be reading books to children during the story time hour? Was that considered a satire then? Of course it wasn't, because those stories sound crazy now. They sounded crazy back then, and yet here we are, where they're absolutely 100% positive, positively real stories. These things happen right now, so they're not satire. And I can't believe that this person on TikTok would be saying this, and that there's no one else that feels this way. I wouldn't be surprised if they're doing this. They're not just saying something in some stupid manner. They're trying to make a legitimate argument for it. And that's where I'm drawing the line. You can't do that. It doesn't work that way. And I'm not going to allow for people, regardless of whether they're acting like it's a joke after the fact or not, to get online and say these kinds of crazy things. Because ultimately, I guarantee you in 5-10 years, they will be saying this. They will be advocating for there to be a kind of this across the board type of puberty blocker for every student or every kid to have. They're going to do this, I guarantee you. So call it satire now all you want, but the radical left cannot stop. There's always this forward momentum that they must be going in at all times. They can never get out of that. They'll always be heading in that direction, and that is the concerning thing about all of this. So I don't care whether they're talking about satire or not or whatever it is. I'm telling you right now, all they're doing is just telling you the choir part out loud. They're predicting what will probably happen in the future, and I'm prepared for it. That's all I'm going to say, is that I'm prepared, and you should be too. So with that being said, thank you for watching or listening to this episode. I apologize for my voice once again. I'm trying to get past all of this right now. Luckily, I was able to kind of at least make it through this episode. So thanks for listening to this one. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts, though, remember to leave a review, as well, as it does help the show out. But with that being said, I'll see you on the next one.